Today's program is brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink, sparking curiosity about food with exhibits you can eat. For more information, visit mofad.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, you're listening to Feast Meets West, the show where we tell the story behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm Linda Liu, and on the line is my co-host in Hong Kong, Iris Van Kerkhove.
Good morning from Hong Kong.
We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, Iris and I dig deep on a dish or aspect of Asian cuisine. We trace its history, how it traveled to the West, and we interview experts on the topic.
It feels great to be back after our Heritage Radio Network spring break. So, Linda, what's the best thing you ate over the break? Or did you have any cool food experience?
Yeah, Iris, actually, you were there for that. So for all the listeners out there, Iris and I and a couple of our best girlfriends went to Taiwan. It was my first time there, and to finally experience like the night market, the food market scene is just like amazing. It is everything that like I thought it would be: crowded, messy, smelly, but delicious. What do you think,
yeah,
Iris?
I think the most interesting thing we had, which I still can't explain, was that fried...
The fried broth cube. Yeah, I wrote it down because I was like, oh, we have to talk about that. But basically, our expert Taiwanese friend, Vicky, she told us it's basically this broth extracted from like pork or chicken. So it's like super savory. And then they mix in this like gelatin. So it like congeals a bit and it has that like smushy texture that Taiwanese people really like. And then they kind of refrigerate it and then they like put it into cubes and then they deep fry it. So then the final result, you like bite into it and it's like crispy on the outside and then it bursts of broth inside. It's weird.
Yeah, and it's supposedly a specialty from Yilan in Taiwan. Like, yeah, so that was like, I think, the most interesting food I had over break.
Yeah, same. Totally agree. But getting back to today's show, we're super excited to have Dale Taldy in the studio with us today. If you're a food nerd like us or a fan of Top Chef, he probably needs no introduction. But for those who aren't familiar with Dale, he's a Filipino-American chef and cookbook author. Aside from opening the Taldy restaurants in Brooklyn, Jersey City, and Miami, as well as Masani, Atlantic Social, and The Heights with his partners at Three Kings Restaurant Group, he is also known for competing on Bravo's Top Chef, Chopped, Iron Chef America, and Knife Fight, and was also head judge on Knife Fight Season 4, as well as a guest judge on both Chopped Junior and Beat Bobby Flay. Wow, that's a mouthful. Welcome to the show, Dale.
Yo, what up? Thanks for having me.
Hi, Dale.
Hey, how are you? From Hong Kong. What's good?
It's far.
So today we're talking about canned meats and the interesting parts they play in Asian cuisine. It's such a funny coincidence because just the other week my coworker was like, Iris, can you do an episode on why there's spam in Asian food? And here we are with Dale to talk about that very topic.
Yeah. So, Iris, what are your thoughts on canned meats? Are you a fan?
You know, I think there's this disconnect where the idea of it kind of like...
No. Start off with...
actually eating it, it's delicious.
No. Start off with a yes or no.
My favorite was corned beef, like canned corned beef hash.
Right.
I actually still, I think to this day, prefer it to real corned beef. It's weird.
Okay, so Dale's saying you have to just say yes or no.
Gun to the head. Yes or no. Do you like canned meats?
Wait, you said yes or no question?
Yeah, I'm asking you. Gun to the head.
Oh.
No, waxing it poetically. Gun to the head. Do you like canned meats?
Okay, I'll go with yes.
Same.
All right.
Yeah. So, Iris, what is the history with these canned meats, and how did it come to be used in Asian cooking? Because we, like, always talk about Asian food making its way to the West. Is this finally a case where we're talking about the West meets East?
So, like with all canned food items, canning meat is a method of preserving processed meat in an airtight container, which provides a very long shelf life, of course. Some famous examples include, like I mentioned, the corned beef, Vienna sausages, and of course the most famous is Spam, and that's what we're going to focus on today.
Yeah, so we actually have some Spam and Vienna sausages in the studio here, so we're going to do some live taste testing, Dale and I. Sorry, Iris, you're missing out, but you can...
I'll live.
You can share more history facts with our listeners as we... dig into this amazing
stuff. Yeah, let's preface people. Let people who aren't seeing what's going down right now. We are opening straight cold canned meats. No fire to it. No.
Can you hear this?
This is like completely unadulterated. Yeah, that's a little creepy. That's a little creepy.
Oh yeah, that kind of smell really hits you. Like,
you know what though? There's a thing. When you open up a stinky package of like ripe cheese,
motherfuckers
are always like, "Oh, it's the feet of the gods and shit." But you open up fucking Vienna sausages and Spam, and then all of a sudden it's weird and shit. I don't think that's fair, because stinky ass meat, stinky cheese is funky as fuck. And then like you get like 60-day dry aged beef, and that shit is spoiled. Like it's straight up spoiled. You're eating rotten meat. So I think it's definitely a double standard.
Just because it's in a can.
Yep.
All right. Here you go, Dale.
Oh, I don't need no fork. Don't worry about that. That's the beauty of some of this potted meats is that it you don't really need to cut this shit. It just kind of scoops out. What is amazing is that the original Spam. Have you had this before? Have you eaten this before? Have you eaten everything on this table?
I have.
Once?
I have.
All right.
Straight from the can and also cooked. But, I mean, to be honest, like, the meat juice just got on my hands, and I'm like...
He just turned this into a After Dark version of the show.
Oh. Okay, I just had the teriyaki Spam.
Yeah, I don't mind
it's
that.
It's savory, yeah.
It's sweetened, you know,
the
it sweetens
issue
all. There's
is
some
that
sugar in
it
there.
Just, like, looks like cat food. That's the thing.
Yeah. You know what, though? Isn't it all perspective, though? I mean, it's like, if you grew up eating this, then it's like, for me, I didn't think this was weird until other people thought this shit was weird. Right? Until other people started, like, second-guessing me and telling me this shit was weird. Mm-hmm. I have a friend, his name is Ben Rivera, and his dad, he's junior, his dad eats these Vienna sausages every day for breakfast. His blood pressure is through the roof. But he grew up eating this shit. And, like, for me, like, even, like, have you ever seen, like, those canned sardines?
Mm-hmm.
It's a specific brand in the Philippines called Ligo. My dad eats that shit all the time. And that for him, it's totally normal to eat that. But what's the difference between that and then, like, sardines from Spain, right? We wax poetically about, like, these cured Spanish sardines from, you know, the Basque Country. But then, like, people, like, poo-poo sardines that are canned with tomato sauce in it, and you're like, come on, man, like there's a place for all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like you shitting on, yeah, and you shitting on this is like, you know, you can get your you could take your, you know, 1996 Beaujolais and kiss my ass with that shit, because it's like, it's delicious, you know.
Yeah,
I'll have that and a Diet Coke and some fried rice. and when I'm hungover and I'm good to go.
Yeah, I kind of feel like you called it out, the theme of this is really like these double standards, you know?
Yeah, I mean, listen, ma'am, this is a lot of sustenance cooking. Let's be real, right?
Mm-hmm.
People who love this usually are like, yo, I'm, you know, didn't come from a lot of money. Had to eat like this, you know? So, that Vienna sausage would have done well with some mustard, though, yo.
Yeah. Like
a little bit of mustard, for real, would have done well.
Next time we do this.
And I've really never seen it in the brine like that. Usually if it's a little bit cold, maybe because it's warm, because it's like sitting in water. Usually it's like jugglefied, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That is not.
I do have a memory of kids in Hong Kong where Iris and I went to high school. You would just like pop open a can of these and sit in the back of the bus and just like eat them with your hands.
Damn, yo, for real?
Gangsta.
That is raw, man. That is some...
So that's a canned meats memory that like lives vividly in my mind. What about for you? Do you have particular food memories associated?
Yeah, a lot of times when my mom worked doubles. So she was a nurse and she worked the overnight shift. So if she did a double, say, and it was a Friday going to Saturday, and my dad didn't have work, and we were like hungry, and it was my old man who got left to cook because there's nothing in the house, which there typically was always something in the house. My dad's go-to was like frying up spam with eggs and rice, you know, or like what I just said with the sardines, like he, you know, chopped up some, made a quick sofrito with garlic and onions and tomatoes, and dumped this can of sardines into this into that sofrito, and then cooked it up for a second, and I mean, he really didn't put much into it. There's enough salt in there to, you know, get you for like a year. I mean, if you read the back of one of these spam or these,
I'm scared too. I can't.
It's the sodium content. It's for like for real, like a year. But we didn't care. You know, we didn't know any better.
Yeah.
For us, it was a treat that your dad cooked for you because it's something you never saw before.
Yeah. It's funny that, you know, like Asians actually who are generally more health conscious than Americans, they're fine with eating spam. Like we see this not just in, one cuisine, this like Korean, Filipino, and Americans are concerned about the nutritional value because it's like processed meats and it's very high in sodium. Do you think... you know, this is something we should be concerned about.
Hell yeah. I mean, if you look at a lot of the like first generation immigrants, you know, that didn't have a lot and then they came to this country and then all of a sudden they're making a decent amount of money, you start to see like a lot of these trends of like bad cholesterol, high cholesterol, mm-hmm. you know, a heightened obesity rates. Because like they legit came from nothing and then came here and then it was like the land of plenty. And even if they're struggling, the food sources here are just so much more readily available, you know. And even shit food, like mm-hmm. going to McDonald's, and I don't shit on McDonald's because I fuck with that. But like you could, if you wanted to go eat at McDonald's, you could eat there like three times a day and eat as much as you want very cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
So you see that a lot of Filipinos who come here and really haven't learned how to cook yet or learn one or two things, but they're going mm-hmm. out to eat a lot more. So they don't know how to cook better or eat better.
Mm-hmm. And it's also about like finding the ingredients and the sources of food that they know, right?
Yeah, 100%. They don't see it here. They're just going to gravitate towards what they know.
Yeah. But also like in Korea, like Iris, you had like an interesting fact about how it's perceived as like a prestige item there or something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Apparently, and I think I heard you can get this in the Philippines too, but there's like gift sets of like special gift sets of spam that you can like, it's like an acceptable gift to give someone.
That's dope.
So it kind of has a different like, yeah, different perception to like Americans.
Yeah, I mean, to me that's dope. I mean, if you think about it, like, especially in the Philippines, what does spam kind of represent, right? It came during World War II when they were under the oppression of the Japanese, and then the Americans came to like save the day. And that's when you started to see all these meats come in, you know, all these potted meats for the they were mainly for the GIs. So you see all this, you see that's popular back then. So for a lot of people who were actually born in that time, you see that it reminds them of better times. It sucked, right? Mm-hmm. But there's this memory of like, hey, at least someone's here to help us out. You know, we were under the rule of somebody else, and now, so there's not only just this like, I like the taste of it. There's this nostalgia of like, better times coming. You know, the infantry is here. You know, people are trying to help us out. So I think sometimes that has to do with your affection towards these items come from that.
Yeah, I mean, and also at the time, it was kind of, in certain Asian countries, it was seen as like a foreign import, so that always kind of is a little more luxurious.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So we're going to take a really quick break, and we'll be right back to talk more spam.
Hi, I'm Dave Arnold, the host of Cooking Issues on the Heritage Radio Network. We all know and love Chinese takeout dishes like General Tso's chicken and egg rolls, but here's the thing. Even though we call it Chinese food, it's not like the food you'd find in China. What's the story behind this cuisine, and how did it become so popular that you can find a Chinese-American restaurant in nearly every town in the country? The answers may surprise you. Visit the Museum of Food and Drink in Brooklyn and see our newest exhibition, Chow, Making the Chinese-American Restaurant. Chow engages visitors with compelling accounts of how Chinese immigrants overcame racism and created Chinese-American cuisine. Discover the science behind the flavors of your favorite takeout dishes, feast on rotating tastings developed by the country's most talented Chinese-American chefs, and try your hand at writing your own fortune, which will be baked into actual cookies by a 1,500-pound fortune cookie machine. What better way to learn, connect, and eat? You can visit Chow at the Museum of Food and Drink on Fridays through Sundays from noon to 6. Tickets and more information can be found at mofad.org.
Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West, and we're talking about canned meats. So, Iris, could you give us a quick, like, condensed history of Spam, one of the most popular canned meats out there?
Yeah, it's actually pretty interesting. So, Spam is a brand of canned pork and ham, of course, made by Hormel Foods Corporation in the U.S., but by the 70s, the brand name had become synonymous with any canned pork or luncheon meat product. It was first introduced in 1937, and the reason it became popularized, as Dale mentioned, was because of World War II. It was obviously very difficult to deliver fresh meat to the front lines, so Spam became a staple in the U.S. soldiers' diet. And I read that over 150 million pounds of Spam was purchased by the military before the end of the war.
Yeah.
So how did it become part of Asian cuisine? Basically, everywhere U.S. troops were, Spam was there too. During the war and the post-war occupations, Spam was introduced to different countries and it was absorbed into native diets, especially as during times of war, food isn't as plentiful. So the story is slightly different in every country, but basically it was because of World War II that Spam made its way into local cuisine of Guam, Hawaii, Okinawa, the Philippines, Hong Kong, Vietnam, and Korea. And that's why you get foods like Spam musubi in Hawaii, stir-fried vegetables with Spam in Okinawa, Spam sandwiches in the Philippines, and budae jjigae in Korea, which translates to army-based stew. So it's definitely a West eats meat food, but it's all kind of coming full circle now because dishes like budae jjigae and Spam musubi are becoming really popular in the States.
Yeah, for sure. So, Dale, do you use it in your cooking?
You know, I do it for, like, specials and stuff like that. I don't do it... I don't make Spam. It's not on the menu regularly. Mm-hmm. I just don't think the public is ready for that kind of. You know who does it really well? Liho Liho Yacht Club out in SF. They make their own spam, like spam.
Okay.
They make their version of spam. Yeah, they take heritage breed pork and, you know, they brine it. They do the whole nine yards, and it comes out as like this awesome looking pork loaf, but it's actually like real.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, gotta look that up.
Yeah, it's beautiful, and they do a really good job with it. But for me, it's like we did a charcuterie platter where we did like an adobo styled rillette of pork, some house made sausages, chicken liver pate, and then we did like spam frites. So we just coated them in flour and fried them, and it went over well. You know. That's the thing, is that the people who will order things like that and like it are people who grew up eating it, you know. Yeah. It's rare you're gonna get someone who's like, so man, we had a bunch of these quote-unquote influencers at the restaurant the other day eating some food, and we started talking
about restaurant
that. Atlantic Social. I was doing the thing,
I'm like out of the 10.
Sorry. I was doing something with one of our partners in Miami, these Bird and Bone and the Confidant and Tally Miami Beach. So we had all these people there, and there was these two girls there, super bougie girls, just like on, like did not give a fuck about being there. And I was like, these chicks are fucking whack. We started talking about spam, and they're like, eye roll, sigh.
Rude. Judge.
And then they started talking about like how they have no man and shit. And I was like, that's why, bitch. Because you can't fuck with spam, and you that kind of stuck up. Bitch, that you don't. When you got that eye roll about something like that, imagine what your man has to deal with when you're pissed off. I was like, what the fuck? But it, you know, when you see people who order that kind of shit at your restaurant, they love it, right? Because they grew up eating it.
Yeah, you gotta respect it. It's not, you know, it's something that like carried people over.
100%. People straight up lived off this. And they just kind of get fallen out of favor. But, you know, if you think about the funky shit people eat these days, you know, like if you think about all the crazy cured meat. I mean, look at like rillette, like a slow cooked meat that's cooked in its own fat and then whipped together with its own fat to make a spread. That is funky.
Yeah, when you say it like that, when you like lay it all out there.
That's what it is. You know, I'm not even trying to sugarcoat that at all. Like, I'm trying to make that sound as appealing as possible, but that's what it is. And people are like, but when you say that, you could charge $17 for it, $18 for it. Make a quenelle, put it on some bread and some mustard. But oh, dare we open a can of spam and fry it with some kimchi and some rice. And oh, I'm not eating kimchi fried rice. Why not? Mm. It's delicious.
Yeah. So, Dale, could you also tell us, outside of, like, you know, all the amazing meat products you try out, you know, what has really, like, interested you recently in cooking? I know, like, on a previous chat, we talked about how you're, like, doing a deep dive into, like, Filipino cooking, but, like, really highlighting the immigrants
cooking it. I'm trying to celebrate... you know, there's, especially in our current political climate right now, I'm trying to embrace, you know, my mentor, Stephen Starr, said it when he won James Beard Awards. Thank you for all the immigrants that make this happen every day. Mm. Like my parents didn't have the stones to come over here from the Philippines. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have this opportunity. And I'm going to highlight all the food of the people who actually make this food. I grew up cooking. So I feel like I'm a little bit older. So I'm a generation. I'm still attached to kind of like that food TV generation, but I didn't grow up with that. Like, I went to culinary school and I graduated in 99, right?
Is that Gen X?
I think so, right?
Yeah.
So I grew up then, and you know, I still have all the kitchens. This wasn't like you go in the kitchen and it's a bunch of kids that are like, I want to be famous and I want to cook for a year and open my own restaurant. I went to school and it was straight up Latinos. Like, they all call me Chino, and that was my name. And I went to and I was like, all right, well, this is what it is. And you go to every kitchen in Chicago, and it's full of the baddest ass Mexican dudes who cooked circles around every one of the like culinary kids that went to CIA or went to. And I'm not discounting my education at all, but man, like, so I feel like that food, and I feel like, you know, all these people who getting displaced and don't have a home anymore, their voice needs to be heard. And what better way through food and reflecting on that, you know, food is something that really kind of brings everybody together. So I want to embrace that, and I want to do immigrant food, and I want to do Filipino food and be more proud of what I do. And the original Taldies are like Asian American, and we're calling the food at Rice and Gold, our new restaurant on Bowery, Asian American. But the slant is it's really gonna lean heavy on like a lot of Filipino food and just in general food of the immigrants.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we're excited about that. We know exploring rice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the cultures of rice.
You kept it broad, the name Rice and Gold.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you have? I don't know. I feel like if you say Asian American, people are just going to generally lump me into, oh, it's Asian food. Cool. I'm down with that. But when you come in and, you got like this killer lamb and shrimp shawarma with dill rice and, crazy harissa, tahini yogurt. Mm-hmm. Like that. Hopefully that makes you feel like, oh, that is Asia.
For
you
sure.
know, that is a little bit. That is Asia. It's not a little bit. That is Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Do you have a vision of how you're going to break that out on the menu? Is it going to like change seasonally?
No, I think, we're just going to cook food that we want to eat. And hopefully everyone gets down with that. A lot of shared foods, we're bringing in dim sum to me, little bites from the heart. But like dim sum can be a dope empanada, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or a killer Jamaican beef patty that I have yet to find a dope one. I mean, I'm not probably eating at the right places, but every time I go, I'm always getting like this bootleg shit that you don't even know what kind of meat it is. But like, what if someone cared about that Jamaican beef patty and made it super ill? All of a sudden, like, you're taking something that you're buying $1.25 for kind of like sustenance, like eating, on the go, and turn it into something really special. And I want to kind of embrace that and maybe not try and like take someone's culture and try and say I'm going to make it better, but just say, people look through a different lens.
Yeah, right. It sounds like it's going to be a super multicultural menu.
Oh, 100%, man. We are embracing New York City at its finest. I mean, if you just step, we are at the corner of Bowery Canal.
Finest and tastiest.
Yes, for sure. We are in the corner of Bowery Canal. The mix of people you get at that corner is amazing. It is like, it's one of the busiest intersections you'll ever see. I mean, it's like, in the world, it's crazy how many people go through that intersection. A lot of Chinese, but then you also see like tons of Latino, tons of West Africans, tons of tourists that are speaking French and Spanish and German. It's crazy.
Yeah. So it sounds like you'll be true to the location. That's like super dope.
Yeah. I think, we're just going to try and do really good food and hopefully fit in with the neighborhood. That's the most important thing we will try and do. No matter how big our restaurants are, we want to say that we fit into these neighborhoods.
Amazing. Amazing. So to round out the episode, I have to ask the question, because we ask all of our guests this, to think about what's next for whatever food item we've talked about. So what do you think is going to happen to Canned Meats? I mean, it's been around for 80 years. It's probably going to be around forever, quite literally, just given its shelf life. Are there just like ways to innovate with it? Are we going to see a surge or dip in popularity?
Yeah, no, I think 100%. I think what you're going to see is people like Leo Yacht Club who make their own spam. People are going to start to make versions of their favorite dishes and make it like with high quality ingredients. Not to say this isn't a high quality ingredient, but it's going to be more homemade. It's going to be more crafted, right? It's going to be like, if I'm going to put this piece of meat in a can, I want to know what goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to see a lot of people that do that. And then I think you're going to see a lot. Someone asked me like a food prediction. I hate the food trend shit, but like people asked me that, and I said, well, considering what, considering who our president is, I think comfort food is going to be one of the biggest things people are going to gravitate towards too.
Mm-hmm.
Because people, on their day to day might not feel safe.
Yeah.
Might not feel like everything's okay. But when they dig into a bowl of something that's comforting to them, they can find assurance. Spoon by spoon or fork by fork or chopstick by chopstick, they'll find assurance and they'll find comfort in that. And they'll find out everything is still okay, despite what's happening, all around us. So I feel like comfort foods like this are just going to explode because people just want to feel like, back in the day when they were young, I'm not a kid anymore. They want to feel like that.
Nostalgia of good times.
Yeah, for sure.
Like
when they
were
a kid and they were riding a bike and, the worry was getting home before sundown instead of like, are the banks gonna collapse, and is our president gonna send us to a world war?
All right. So on that positive note, Iris, do you have any other questions for Dale?
No, thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Dale, thank you so much for joining us on the show. For listeners who want to keep up with your future projects, where are some places they should follow you online to keep updated?
Yeah, our website, Three Kings Restaurant Group, or hit us up on Instagram or Twitter. You know, Masoni, NYC, Taldi, Taldi Brooklyn, Taldi Jersey City, Taldi Miami Beach, Atlantic Social, BK is our Twitter handle. Social media, we love it, and we ride with it hard. So catch us on, like, you know, Rice and Gold Instagram. Or
and when is Crown. That opening up?
Rice and Gold should open by the end of summer, or awesome. By midsummer. The Crown, which we were at last night, the rooftop at that hotel.
50 is Bowery.
50 Bowery. The rooftop's open right now. Just drinks right now, and a small food program later.
Awesome. Awesome. So much happening.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
So, Iris, are you going to go get some spam and catch up on this spam eating?
Yeah, it's still early morning here, so I think after this discussion, I might have to go to my local diner and get a bowl of, like, egg and luncheon meat over ramen, which is, like, Hong Kong's most classic spam dish.
Awesome. Sounds delicious. So that wraps up our show for today. Thanks for tuning in, and make sure to subscribe to Feast Meets West on iTunes or Stitcher if you haven't already, and please do leave us a rating and review. It's going to really help us spread the word about the show. We'll be back next week with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food.
For listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.